Former Attorney General Tom C. Clark said, "A defendant on trial for a specific crime is entitled to his day in court, not in a stadium or city or nationwide arena." The death of Ava Michaels was a national headline. The subsequent evolution in the narrative from suicide to murder progressed incrementally online, in print, and in the mouths of newscasters everywhere. Everyone wanted to hear from the accused, the formerly illustrious Dr. Stowe. Who was this man who had garnered the soul and complete trust of America's sweetheart? Who was this person who fathered her, monitored her, arguably controlled her? What was it about him that turned her head so completely? Any journalist in the country would have given their right arm to be given an exclusive, but none would occur. The first time the American public would hear the voice of Dr. Stowe would be on the stand.
R-O-B-E-R-T-S-T-O-W-E. I was Ava Michaels' psychiatrist.
Robert, how did you come to meet Ava Michaels?
I was referred to her by a New York colleague of mine, Dr. Marianne Christensen. Ava was moving to Florida and needed a local mental health professional. We underwent a series of introductory sessions to understand if we were a good fit, and when we mutually determined that we were, we began regular sessions.
I see. How often were your regular sessions?
They began once or twice a week, but quickly increased in volume. Within a few months, we were seeing each other 4 or 5 times a week.
Mm-hmm. How long would your sessions last?
Anywhere between 90 minutes and 4 hours, depending on her needs and stresses at the time.
Robert, why did Ava require this much therapy?
Ava grew up with a deep sense of abandonment. Her father was absent. Her mother was hospitalized as a paranoid schizophrenic. She confided to me that she was sexually molested during her periods in foster care. Ava developed her own paranoid complex coupled with an intense need to be loved. This made life difficult for her, especially in relationships. She would cling to someone, only to push them away or sabotage. This pattern left her perpetually unfulfilled. It was a challenging existence.
I'm sure. Did you find yourself up to this professional challenge?
I did. I am a highly esteemed psychoanalyst, and new, deep, and consistent psychoanalysis was her best shot at leading a healthful, balanced life.
Did you ever diagnose her with a condition?
I did. I diagnosed her with a paranoid borderline disorder.
Is that a personality disorder?
It is. The condition is marked with self-sabotaging behaviors, such as risky promiscuity, substance abuse. As with any personality disorder, it is incurable.
Then what hope did you offer her?
It's one thing to be cured. She didn't have a cold. There was no remedy. However, through understanding and discipline, she had the opportunity to form better patterns and lead a more productive life. She had the ability to decrease the amount of mental and emotional pain she experienced on a daily basis.
Okay. Was your treatment of Ava Michaels what you would describe as typical?
It was not. It's not uncommon for a patient to lead such a highly erratic and deeply disturbed life. However, it is uncommon for said person to also have the means to address it as thoroughly as Ms. Michaels. I was able to help her with a more detailed, thoroughly regimented practice than with any other patient in my career, and I was able to use non-traditional practices to help her to the best of my ability.
Okay, Robert, let's get right to it then. Non-traditional practices. You're talking about including Ava in your family life.
Yes.
Why did you do that?
Ava was denied a normal childhood, with parents and siblings and dinner at 6. She yearned for that. Always. She tried to recreate it with partners, but always as the child. Then, She tried to have her own children to fill this picture, but she was unable. When I met her, she was divorced and childless. And she still yearned to be part of a typical family. Now, I knew she'd be doomed to repeat this cycle until that need was met. So yes, I opened up my own home, my own family, to her. I did so she would finally be able to feel whole, so she could make healthier choices in her other interpersonal relationships.
Was this therapeutic model successful?
Largely, yes. She assimilated easily and happily. She calmed down. She regressed from the peak of her drug use. It was progress. Yes, there were ups and downs and highs and lows, but progress isn't always linear. The point is that she was happy in my home, and I believed the structure was working.
We've heard testimony suggesting that there may have been a sexual relationship between yourself and Ava Michaels.
Absolutely not.
Why do you think some people might have gotten that idea?
Because of Ava's illness, she was incapable of fully separating sex from love. To Ava, sex was both a tool to attain the closeness she desired and a tool to maintain distance by feeling in control. When a man desired her, she felt in control of a situation. She felt safe. To allow a man to love her while not sexually desiring her was a difficult proposition for Ava. That made her feel vulnerable.
Robert, did you love her?
Yes.
Are you aware? Some might feel that's inappropriate, given your professional relationship.
It would have been inappropriate if I'd slept with her. There's nothing wrong with love. If that love had in any way made me act irresponsibly toward her, then it would be wrong. But a feeling? No. To care? No. I do not accept that's wrong.
And so how did Ava's need to be desired impact your therapeutic relationship?
She would try to seduce me. Sometimes with a look or a caress. Sometimes by exposing herself to me.
Exposing herself to you?
There was one occasion. I asked her to make a videotape of herself, verbally chronicling her stream of consciousness. She gave me the file to review, and when I played it, I saw she was in her underwear. It was not a welcome discovery. There were also occasions she would invite me into a room while she was changing.
Do you believe she desired you?
I believe she wanted me to desire her.
Robert, did you?
No.
Okay. Tell me about Ava's use of barbiturates.
Ava had suffered from crippling insomnia since childhood, ever since she experienced sexual abuse. Nights were terribly difficult for her. She would describe them as drawing out interminably, leaving her alone and fearful. Her worst fear, being alone, was frequently realized in the nighttime when everyone around her was sleeping. She would lie awake, thinking and missing and remembering. She was so desperate to sleep. Always desperate to sleep. And so prescription medication became a part of her lifestyle. When I met her, she was abusing 3 different kinds of barbiturates, including Ritalin.
Would you describe her as an addict?
Yes, I would.
Why not get her then into rehab?
Firstly, she wouldn't have gone to a rehab, and that kind of environment wouldn't have been right for her. Secondly, the drugs were the core of the problem. The shame and fear were at the core. The drugs were only the symptom. I needed to address the problem itself with therapy.
Did you make efforts to curb her drug use?
Of course. I worked with her at length to exercise more discipline. I empowered her to rely on herself and not pharmaceuticals. I prescribed her limited quantities, and I partially transitioned her to medicinal enemas.
Okay. Now let's talk about these enemas. Those have been described as irresponsible or suspicious.
Well, I cannot understand that. The only legitimate objection that I heard during this trial was Dr. Carroll's, when he suggested enema use would flush away good bacteria. He's quite right. That's why I also instructed Ava to take daily probiotics. Aside from that, there is nothing wrong with medicinal enemas. They are an excellent way to medicate a patient safely, particularly a patient with substance issues.
How so?
One bag contains a very specific amount of medicinal solution. It's not like giving her a large bottle of pills and hoping she won't take a few extra. This was measurable. It was safe. She was not administering the enemas by herself. I had a professional administer them for her, so I knew she wouldn't have too much.
Yes. Let's talk about Ruth Ivanov. Is it true you installed her to spy on your patient?
Absolutely not. I suggested Ava hire her because she needed a housekeeper. Well, I knew a housekeeper. She happened to have worked with psychiatric patients before. She was not hired in the capacity of a nurse. She was a housekeeper. She was hired and paid by Ava Michaels. She was never paid by me.
You never paid Ruth Ivanov, right?
No.
Okay. Dr. Stowe, we've heard testimony that Miss Ivanov monitored some of Ava's activities. We've also heard testimony that you had Miss Ivanov pick up medicine for Ava. Now, how do you explain this if she wasn't working for you?
Anyone will tell you Ruth was more than a housekeeper. She was closer to a personal assistant because she carried out a multitude of functions for Ava. I had her pick up medicine for Ava, of course, the same as I'd ask an assistant to run an errand on behalf of Ava. And she didn't monitor anything. There was no surveillance. I asked her to keep an eye on Ava. I cared about Ava very much. Because Ava was in a fragile mental state, I asked the person who was around her most frequently, Ruth, to keep an eye on her. The same as I'd ask anyone around Ava consistently to keep an eye on her.
So the occasions in which Ruth informed you about Ava's activities, these were done informally?
Yes, as a favor between friends.
Were you Ruth's friend?
We weren't close, but yes, we were friendly.
Robert, why did you go to Ava's house on August 4th?
I received a call from Ruth. She told me that she was concerned because Ava had asked her if there was any oxygen in the house. It struck her as an odd and possibly alarming question, so she alerted me.
What did you do then?
I drove right over. When I arrived, Ava was in a state of agitation. She hadn't slept, and she was feeling restless and unhappy.
Had something happened to upset her?
Not exactly. It was a mood born of the big things. I received the impression that she'd been awake all night stewing on the aspects of her life that caused her the most discontentment. The absence of a partner, the beating her professional reputation continued to take, money. It was an unstable time of her life.
And how did you counsel her?
I knew she was in a frame of mind that made her susceptible to overusing medication. So I tried steering her toward a more natural remedy. I recommended she drive to the beach and go for a walk. I suggested she drink a Coke for a little sugar. I wanted her to be outside her bedroom, away from her meds. I wanted her to make healthier choices.
If she was in an agitated state, why did you leave her that night?
Agitation was not an unusual mood for Ava. She was a client that required a great deal of attention. I counseled her most days and frequently emergency sessions in the middle of the night. While she frequently needed attention, she needed to learn how to self-soothe and how to keep her own company. She had to learn a little independence, and staying by her side day and night would do her no favors. Besides, after we spoke for a few hours, she seemed to be feeling better. I thought she was going to heed my advice about being in the fresh air. She was in a more positive mood when I left. I thought the rest of the evening would go smoothly.
Robert, what did you do when you left her house?
I went home and changed. Then I went to a dinner party with my wife.
And when was the next time you heard from Ava?
At the party, I received a call on my cell. I told Ava I couldn't speak. that I was at a party. She told me that she had very important news for me and that I had to excuse myself from my company. When I did so, she told me her former stepson had broken up with his fiancée. If this had been an emergency, I would have excused the interruption. But this was no emergency. I had already disrupted my plans once that day to speak with her. Now she was calling me away from social plans to continue to engage. Recently, I'd been trying to set boundaries with her. She just kept crossing them. It was very disappointing. I told her that this was not an acceptable reason to call me, and I ended the phone call.
Did you hang up on her?
I told her I was ending the phone call, and I did so. I did not yell, I did not raise my voice, but I was firm. This was necessary.
Did she call you back?
She attempted to call back, but I declined the call.
What happened next?
My wife and I finished our evening with friends and then went home to bed. The next thing I knew, I was awoken from my sleep with another phone call. This time, from Ruth Ivanov. She informed me that something was wrong with Ava, and I needed to rush over immediately.
And did you?
Yes.
What happened when you arrived?
I entered to find Ruth Ivanov in a state of concern because Ava wasn't answering her bedroom door. I took a fire poker and went outside to the French doors that led into Ava's bedroom. First, I peered into the window and saw Ava face down on her bed. She was not moving. I took the fire poker and broke the window. Then, I reached through the broken window and turned the knob from the inside to let myself in. I rushed to Ava's side. She was cold. I checked her vitals and confirmed she was dead.
I'm very, very sorry. What did you do next?
I was shocked to find her that way. I believe I was in a state of shock. I cried. I remember letting Ruth in so she could see her. She was upset also. Naturally, we were just deeply, deeply saddened.
Of course. Robert, why didn't you call the police then?
For what purpose? She was dead. Had been for hours. There was no paramedic in the world that could save her. What was the urgency? To see her wrapped up in a body bag and taken to the morgue? You know, you'll forgive me if I left her with her dignity a few hours longer.
Why did you call Dr. Carroll?
I was just trying to understand what happened. This was my patient. She had just killed herself. I checked the bottles by her bed to see what she had taken. I think this was a natural thing to do. I saw she had a recently filled bottle of Rylatol. I did not prescribe that. It appeared she'd taken the whole bottle. I rightly assumed Dr. Carroll had given her the lethal dose, and I telephoned him. I'd want to know if the positions were reversed.
I see. Why did you call Ava's publicists?
You'd have to know Ava to understand the answer to that question. Ava was a woman with a limited self-identity. She based her entire self-image on what other people, her fans, the public, thought about her. She cared so much about that. And now, here she was, her final hour, looking terrible, pathetic. It wasn't right. Her room was a mess, clothes and papers strewn everywhere, some dishes. She looked... Her hair wasn't recently dyed. Her roots were showing. She had on no makeup. She wouldn't leave the house without makeup. She had recently been fired and had been receiving criticism. If she'd given herself more time, she could have regained the role from the studio. She was in talks to do that. She could have dug herself out financially. She could have kicked the drugs. She could have done it all. But instead, she had left at her lowest point, and that's how the world would have seen her. The last thing I could do for her, the last thing I could do for my friend, was control the narrative as best I could. I didn't want some tawdry tabloid fodder to leak. I didn't want the first news of her demise to be seedy. I wanted it to be dignified, reverential, glamorous. That's how she would have wanted it. The last chapter in the Ava Michael story.
Okay. Understood. Dr. Stowe, by glamorous, do you mean she would have wanted her ending to be remembered as beautiful?
Objection, leading.
That was sustained.
Dr. Stowe, why do you think the police charged you with this murder?
Ava Michaels was beloved. When someone so loved is taken from the public, they cry out for justice. They want someone to hold accountable. And the law is an extension of the public. The law serves the public, represents the public. I don't blame the public for wanting a villain to hold on to. I understand that. But there is no villain in this story. There is only a victim. I wish I could have saved her. I tried. But some people are too far gone to save.
Good afternoon, Dr. Stowe.
Good afternoon.
I have several questions for you. I'm going to attempt to clarify some points from your testimony. Do you need to take a break before we begin?
No. I'm perfectly comfortable.
Excellent. Dr. Stowe, in your testimony, you stated that Ava did not administer the enemas by herself. You had a professional administer them for her. How is it you had Ruth Ivanoff administer these enemas for you when she didn't work for you?
She didn't work for me. However, as Ava's assistant, she would administer enemas, the same way she would accomplish a multitude of tasks for her.
But you did say you had her administer enemas.
I knew Ruth had a history with nursing, and I would recommend Ava have Ruth administer the enemas.
So, when you said you had Ruth administer the enemas, that wasn't true?
I misspoke. It was my recommendation that Ava administer the enemas. But I never ordered her to do so. I never ordered Ruth to do anything.
Have you ever known any other housekeepers to administer enemas?
Like I said, her title was housekeeper, but she functioned as an assistant.
Okay. I'm curious how you came to refer her to Ava's employ, with knowledge about her history as a psychiatric nurse, without any plan for her to use those skills.
Is that a question?
Is it your testimony that you did not expect Ruth Ivanoff to operate as a psychiatric nurse?
She once happened to hold a job as a nurse in a psych ward. She also held a job as a realtor. She also held a job as a housekeeper. She wore a lot of hats.
Respectfully, that didn't answer my question, Dr. Stowe. Is it your testimony that you did not expect Ruth Ivanoff to operate as a psychiatric nurse?
Respectfully, I believe I've answered that question a number of times. No, I didn't expect her to nurse. I also never asked her to nurse.
But you did ask Ava to have her nurse by administering medicinal treatments.
That treatment did not require professional nursing. People administer their own enemas all the time. Ava could have administered her own, but I thought it provided an extra layer of precaution to have a second party present. So, I suggested she ask the woman operating as her assistant to be present.
Why did she need an extra layer of precaution?
Because, as I've said, she struggled with substance abuse. I wanted to control the amount. As her doctor, I wanted to control the amount she had access to.
Is it true you also prescribed her pills?
Yes.
And her personal physician prescribed her pills too, is that correct?
Yes.
So she was being prescribed pills from two people on top of the medicinal enemas you were prescribing.
Objection. Asked and answered.
That was overruled.
Yes, that is my understanding.
In addition to the enema administration, Ruth Ivanov filed reports for you. Is that correct?
No.
No, Ruth Ivanov didn't report to you on Ava's movements and activities?
She would sometimes relay information, but that was done unofficially.
Dr. Stowe, I'm going to read State Exhibit 121 for you. July 24 through 26, I stayed at Seaspray for two nights, and Ava was in town and slept in the house both nights. Social activity the 24th. She went to Italian restaurant with reporter from Life magazine. Came back inebriated at 2 a.m. Did not eat food. Went to bed approximately 2:30. Did not hear after that, so evidently slept. July 25, no social plans. Ava in kitchen eating steak and drinking champagne at 3:30 a.m. Slurring heavily. Stayed up playing albums until 5 a.m. Suspected drugs that night. Stayed in bed until 9 a.m. July 26. This was a report written by Ruth to you. Is that correct?
It appears that way. I never received it.
Dr. Stowe, does this report sound unofficial to you?
I asked her to keep an eye on Ava because I cared about her. I did not ask her to issue me reports.
So she took it upon herself to write up reports?
Yes.
Were all of her reports this militant and thorough?
Those are your words. Look, I cared about Ava, and we both had her best interests at heart.
You said you wanted to control the amount of drugs Ava had access to. Were there other elements of her life you wanted to control?
What does that mean?
Ruth Ivanov mentions Ava's social plans in her reporting. I'm curious why she included that. Did you want to control Ava's social life?
Of course not.
But you recommended she stay home on August 4th as opposed to joining her friends, the Larsons, for dinner.
I thought she needed some rest.
Did you feel as though you wielded a lot of control in Ava's life?
No more than any other conscientious therapist would.
Would any other conscientious therapist refer to himself as the good father?
That was a healthful therapeutic program. She needed a lot of care. She needed structure. She'd been in treatment her whole life, and there was no improvement. She needed a man who would think outside the box.
A man, not a doctor?
Excuse me?
Did you ever have sex with Ava Michaels?
Excuse me?
Did you ever have sex with Ava Michaels?
Absolutely not.
Is it true you called her seductive in a case study?
I said rich and famous patients needed an exorbitant amount of attention, and they were seductive in this regard. I did not mean sexually.
Did you ever buy her garments of clothing?
I bought her gifts on special occasions, the same as I would for any friend of the family.
Did you buy her undergarments?
Slips. Rarely. If they went with a dress. Never anything sexual.
You testified that she orchestrated ways in which you'd walk in on her undressed. Did you always leave the room when this happened?
This is ridiculous.
Did you ever stay in the room while she undressed?
It was vital that I do so. She needed to see that there was a man who would stay by her and care about her without him benefiting by a sexual relationship. She was testing me on those occasions.
So you allowed yourself to be around her undressed?
Ava was as comfortable with nudity as you and I are with clothes. I did not act shocked by her brazenness, but I would not retreat as though I couldn't withstand the temptation. She needed me to stay.
Dr. Stowe, in a paper you wrote on countertransference, you wrote, "Needless to say, my feelings in response to this aspect of our therapeutic relationship were conflicting. To acquiesce in any manner would be to betray her trust in me as a professional. To deny her would be to risk re-traumatization." Is it true that you felt that to deny her sexually would be to risk re-traumatizing her?
Yes.
But you did deny her?
Yes.
And in doing so, you risked re-traumatizing her?
Yes.
Okay. Dr. Stowe, I'm going to play the voicemail you left for Ava 8 days before her death. Dr. Stowe, when you said, I don't give a shit what you say to whom. To what were you referring?
Telling people I was neglecting her, that I was a bad therapist, that I wasn't there when she needed me.
She said these things about you?
When I wouldn't answer her phone calls.
To whom would she say these things?
Ruth, Dr. Carroll, my kids. She would reach out to anybody she thought could get to me. She wanted more engagement. I was firm with her that day, but I was only telling her those tactics were unacceptable.
So you weren't referring to Ava saying things about a physical involvement between the two of you?
No.
So when you say your wife is pissed, that had nothing to do with your relationship to Ava?
It had to do with our phones blowing up.
I see. Okay, Dr. Stowe. You mention intimidations and threats in this voicemail. What threats were you talking about?
That she would continue to call. That she wouldn't leave us alone.
Those were the threats that incensed you enough to leave that voicemail?
Have you ever been harassed?
No, I haven't.
Well, I have. The threat of continued, unabated harassment is very serious.
If that's how you felt, if she had reached that level of harassment, why not drop her as a patient?
Because I still thought that I could help her.
You kept working with her, despite the fact that she was now bad-mouthing you and harassing you and your family?
Yes.
So the intimidations and threats only pertain to calling you too often?
I don't appreciate the way you diminish that.
I'm sorry. Dr. Stowe, why did you see a psychiatric malpractice attorney on July 23rd, 2017?
It's common practice for a psychiatrist to see an attorney as a matter of course.
Did anything prompt you to make this appointment?
No.
You only made it because it's common practice for a psychiatrist to do this?
Yes.
Had you ever seen a malpractice attorney as a matter of course before?
No.
I see. Dr. Stowe, did you have anything to drink after you discovered Ava's body?
Yes.
What did you have?
Scotch.
Did Ruth Ivanoff join you in this drink?
It was a calming effect in a moment of grief.
That's not what I asked.
Yes, she drank also.
Phone records indicate that all three of your phone calls that night, cumulatively, lasted about 27 minutes.
Okay.
Yet you were in the house 3 hours before calling the police.
Your Honor, is there a question coming here?
What were you doing the other 2.5 hours?
Breathing. Mourning.
You were breathing.
I was taking a moment to process. How would you feel if you just discovered a close friend dead?
I'm not on trial for murder.
At this point, the defense objected. The judge intervened.
I'm just trying to ascertain what you were doing for 2.5 hours in a house alone with a dead woman. So what were you doing?
Objection. Asked and answered.
I'll rephrase. Dr. Stowe, is it your testimony that for 2.5 hours alone in a house with a dead woman, you were just breathing?
I told you, I was processing. It was a traumatic event. I don't recall every step I took, every thought I had. I was in shock.
Why was Ruth Ivanoff washing sheets?
What?
When Detective Wren arrived, he testified that Ruth Ivanoff was washing sheets. Do you know why she was doing this?
No, I don't know. You would have to ask her.
I can't. She's dead.
I know.
Is that all the housework you saw her do?
I don't know. Maybe. I don't remember. We were both in shock, I assume. People respond to traumatic events differently. Some people need to keep busy. I would assume that's why.
Did you move the body?
No.
So when you entered the room, she was posed exactly as police found her 3 hours later?
Yes.
And you didn't change the sheets underneath the body?
No.
Do you find it unusual that in such a messy bedroom with papers and books and glasses and bottles everywhere, that Ava had such a clean, unwrinkled set of sheets underneath her when she died?
No.
Okay, Dr. Stowe.
Okay. There's hardly a time when I appreciate a really great pair of socks as much as when I'm traveling. I've had a crazy week. I flew to Boston just in time to attend my great friend's great party, at which I danced a lot, and that felt great at the time, but my feet were killing me when I woke up the next morning. Slipping into Bombas socks was the greatest cure for my post-dance aches and pains. They're cushioned, arch-supported, stay up, and breathe. 2 years of research made my travel in socks possible. So then I sprinted across town, met some friends for breakfast, and then I hopped onto a train to New York, where, incidentally, I met my baby niece for the first time and ran to see her on the train platform. And I was comfortable and running and elated the whole time, pain-free, pain gone. Life happens fast, and I relish great products like Bombas who make it possible for me to keep up with it. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. My favorite thing about Bombas as a company is their donation policy. For every pair of Bombas socks purchased, they donate a pair. Socks are the number one most requested items in homeless shelters, but they don't accept used socks, so there's always this deficit. Bombas and their customers are working to bridge this gap. That's beautiful. I feel lucky to champion them, what they are, and what they do. Deliberations listeners get 20% off their first order, and you will love the dreamy feel of these socks. They really are that good. Go to bombas.com. That's bombas.com, and you'll get 20% off your first order. bombas.com/deliberations to be extra supportive to me, thank you, and use code DELIBERATIONS for that 20% off discount from your first order. Thanks, guys.
I really just, I have so many opinions. I can see Harriet's face and Mikey and Adelaide. I want to know what you're thinking, Krasinski, and Bill, what are your thoughts on what we've just heard?
This is probably one of the first times that I am asking myself the question that maybe Dr. Stowe wasn't the best fit for.
Thank God.
Wait a minute. I want to hear you out.
You know, I don't know that I am still 100% sure that he murdered her, but I definitely can kind of see some points now where he didn't handle things in the best light. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. It just kind of threw me off with the whole slip thing, dress thing, but I'm open-minded still. I mean, Bill, what did you take from it?
Well, I definitely agree. He's not in the best light. Is he guilty? I didn't hear any facts. But what I did hear was Dr. Christensen say that Ava is has paranoid borderline disorder, which Dr. Stowe agrees with. And I also heard that Ava gets close to people only to sabotage them. That's what I heard. I'm just going off the testimony. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So I can already see. Harriet, you're finna tear into me.
No, I'm not gonna tear into you.
Just a couple.
I'm just
more.
Gonna agree
She's
with
just
you.
Gonna do the facts.
I'm just gonna agree with you because you're all about the facts.
Okay, and I heard that, you know, Dr. Stowe, and Ruth were friends, but they weren't close.
Isn't
and many
that
of
weird?
Us having friends, and we don't have to be. I mean, Krasinski is my friend. We're not that close. I mean, we've just met here, you know, during the trial. That's so I'm just speaking to facts here of what I heard. You can be a housekeeper. You can be a friend. Mm-hmm. You can be an assistant. The enema can be self-administered, right?
But it wasn't. That's a fact. That's what he said.
Go ahead. Wrap it up, baby.
Well, I don't know if that was a fact of that night. And what looks more to me like Ruth, rest her soul, could be more of the culprit than Dr. Stowe. She was being paid by Ava, not Dr. Stowe. We don't know what the pay was. if she wanted more, or if she even liked the circumstances that she was in.
But wouldn't it make more sense to keep alive the person who's paying you? Like, the moment Ava dies, your paychecks stop.
Exactly. Absolutely right. Mm-hmm. But wouldn't it be, wouldn't it make sense to just walk out of a door or unlock a door if you were feeling ill on the night where you were crying out for attention, if you did not want to commit suicide? She could have easily exited the door. Who's to say that Ruth didn't do something to stop her from doing that? Dr. Stowe wasn't there. I'm not putting Ruth on trial. I'm just saying that there still isn't enough evidence to convict Dr. Stowe. You guys can go ahead.
I see. So you're saying there's still some reasonable doubt in your mind?
A lot of reasonable doubt. Sure. They're going to point to a lot of things that were said here, but I just want to hear the facts if you have them.
You know what?
I got some facts.
Okay, go ahead, Mike.
Okay, so this is what stood out to me the most. When he was giving his testimony and he walked into the room, he described everything about that room to a T, where the pills were. He described that she was lying on the bed face down, but yet was still able to describe her makeup, that there was none on there and that her hair was messy. How can you describe someone's makeup when they're face down on their bed?
And then also not remember all the other details.
Well,
I could tell when Shannon's makeup wasn't on from a mile away. I'll tell you that.
When her face was down in the pillow? When
you couldn't see her face? She was a hag. Even the roots, you know, you can see when somebody is face down.
The roots you can see, but not the makeup.
Yeah, let's talk about the makeup.
What I would have brought up more so was the point that the sheets were not wrinkled.
That's another thing we talked about.
Dr. wasn't doing the laundry. Ruth was. Mm. Again, maybe you have to look at where the finger should be pointed.
But what's the motive for Ruth? But you know what? It was a money trail. That was the thing. Like, someone is paying you. If you're going to keep somebody drugged, you're going to keep them drugged, but you're not going to kill them.
Was also stated that she had a dislike for Ruth, and Ruth really didn't even understand why. Penelope didn't understand why. It could have just been her face. So if I'm working for you, mm-hmm. Rose, and you don't like me, mm-hmm. right? So what's to say that I don't want to get at you, no matter how much you're paying me? Who knows what she was put through in that house, having to care for Ava?
Sure, we don't know that, but I think looking at the relationship between Dr. Stowe and Ruth is just like, that's so suspicious. He's such a flip-flopper. For me, his testimony, he did go back on his word.
He said, I misspoke. Yeah. Okay, and there were several things that he said,
and then he said the opposite later. And the thing that really stood out in my mind was that he said that he was concerned about her that night because he was, what did he say exactly? Something about that she might hurt herself. Mm-hmm. He was concerned about that. And yet, when the phone call came, he cut her off. And then the second time...
What was the phone call about?
Well, it was about her happy news, but then didn't answer the phone the next time she called when he knew that it was about happy news?
That it would set her off is what you're saying?
Yeah,
Adeline?
Yeah.
What you're saying is that he had a responsibility because if he didn't answer the phone, that was going
to
set her off.
Let's talk about the elephant in the room.
Right.
You made some really good points, and I'm glad to see that you don't think that Ava killed herself anymore.
Wait, who's the elephant in the room? Is that Shannon?
The elephant in the room is Dr. Stowe, because let's talk about what he said on trial. He lied several times. Number one, he admitted to tampering with police evidence by saying, it was my job to control the narrative, thereby not contacting the police for 2.5 hours, doing the spin control.
He said he wanted to control the narrative.
That is tampering with evidence by not calling the police when he was supposed to as a doctor.
He did say that he wanted to protect her. You're right, Harriet.
Right. Number two, another lie that he said. She had a problem with drugs, and I wanted to make sure that she did not overdose. So what did I do? Even though there are two other people prescribing medications, I gave her more drugs. But not only that, I gave her this medication in this capsule that she could insert anally. But no. To control it, I made sure that there was someone there to supervise her, but not the maid. But yes, the maid. She's not a nurse, but she's her helper. He's all over the place.
I didn't want reports, but I got reports.
I got reports. He has lied several times about
that. None of that is suspicious, though.
Yes, it is.
He's in control.
Yes, it is.
It's suspicious, but it's not. But he said, okay, I didn't ask for reports, but I got reports. What's wrong with it?
So, Bill, you're saying that he's inconsistent, but he's not a murderer.
But then he also said, I never received the reports.
Let's talk about this. As a doctor, he has declared her paranoid schizophrenic. Mm-hmm. And borderline. So therefore, he knows what that means.
The mother was paranoid schizophrenic.
He said that she was
paranoid borderline.
She was borderline.
Borderline. Paranoid. He said paranoid as well and borderline.
Yeah, but not schizophrenic.
Not schizophrenic, but paranoid. Paranoid, let's talk about that word, means that you are concerned about something that isn't even in the room. This woman has said, I was raped by my parents in their care as a child.
Her foster parents as a child.
I have been sexually molested. I have been, so now I have a fear that people that love me, that claim to be my father, my daddy, are going to rape me. And yet you have a doctor who is trained to supposedly know this, says, yeah, I'm your daddy. Come live in my house. Get away from me. You're talking to me too much.
And
are you kidding me?
That, this he man stays in the room when she is undressing
and buys her underwear.
Let
me buy you some underwear, baby.
Wait a minute.
Let me buy you some underwear.
Can I just if you have a daughter and after she's gone through puberty, if you want to show distance, you do not watch your 14-year-old, 15-year-old. You don't watch your post-pubescent daughter change in front of you to show her that.
Right. Especially when you're a doctor and you know that.
Wasn't his actual daughter and she's not 14, 15.
But he's
46 years old. I mean, let's keep in mind.
Don't watch a 46-year-old woman.
What you all are getting away from.
I think you have lost the point. I think you've lost sight. Because here's the sight.
Guys, we're just talking over each other. We said we weren't going to do this. Come on.
She is dead. There's two entries for medication to come in her body orally. We can't prove that. The second one is her rectum. Who has access to her rectum?
That either.
And you can't prove it, so
I think
couldn't convict
him. Didn't we decide the medical facts were admissible?
Can we go back to the whole issue of the sexual stuff?
So we're just going off
testimony. Go back to the underwear point, because I didn't even get to make my counterpoint.
Okay, Adelaide, then Bill, then Mikey, then Krasinski?
I feel like
that's my name.
We got a record here. So go ahead.
So we need to look at the fact that he knew she was a borderline. He knew that she had issues sexually because she had been sexually abused when she was younger.
And he stated that.
And yes, he stated that. And yet, he also stated that he stayed in the room when she changed clothes because he thought that she needed a man, not a doctor, by the way, a man who would stick with her.
And not want her sexually. You have to say the entire thing if you're going to say it. That's why he could have wrong to show.
But to her, it would have been sexual.
Then Bill, then Mikey.
The whole thing is that to her, it would have been sexual because of her sexual abuse and because of her borderline personality.
And as a doctor, he would know that.
Then Bill. Then Bill, not Harriet.
Okay, Bill, there we go.
When asked the question, he said, I needed to stay. Ava wanted to want me to want her. But I had to stay to prove that this wasn't the type of relationship that we had. Going to the underwear. That's exactly what we just heard. Going to the underwear point.
I understand that's what he said.
Women, please, Adelaide. I can ask you women, because I'm not too familiar. I used to buy Shannon these big underwear. She didn't wear thongs. But, I mean, I don't know.
That's too much information.
Parachute. I'm just stating the facts. A slip. Which is undergarments, but it's not sexual as a thong. If I'm right or wrong, I don't know.
But that's
you're wrong. It's underwear. It's underwear.
So slips.
Slips. Underwear. Spanx. Bras. Bustiers. G-strings.
I do know what a bustier is.
What are those little things?
Spanx are not on trial here, you guys. Let's stick to the facts.
I'm just saying there was no malicious intent, or he didn't want to come across as it being sexual.
If he's buying her underwear, yes, it is.
He stated that multiple times. Adelaide,
he bought her slips multiple times.
Slips are not.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. It's underwear.
They're not sexy to me.
It's I'm sorry, that doesn't turn you on, baby. What does turn you on? Does that matter? It turns him on.
Number one, let's
he gets it off for a slip, baby.
Number two, I have a counter question, and then we
let's do turn ons and turn offs at the end. Can we just focus on the case here?
If a man, when you were with Shannon or any woman that you are with, if another man buys her a slip, you will not feel that is a weird move on his part. That's my question to you. Socially, in our world, if a man buys another man's woman a slip.
But she didn't have another
He has a wife. He should be buying her a slip.
I'm just asking a question about how we think social convention is. If we're going to talk about weird, of course it's subjective, but we're in our particular culture and we know what is considered normal and not an abnormal. If a man buys another man's woman a slip, would that other man think that that's something is weird? Or would that woman receiving that slip...
I think that's a misstatement. I find it weird. Because Ava didn't have another man.
But whether
it's not about him. He had another woman.
The idea that if you feel offended or something is a little bit weird, then
you're saying
that because Ava didn't have a man, it's appropriate for him to buy her underwear?
Let me put it this way. Does that mean that
I don't have a man, it's appropriate to buy my underwear?
Let me put it this way, okay? If a man bought me a slip...
And it wasn't your husband.
Yeah, and it wasn't my husband. I would wonder what his intentions were.
Yes.
I wouldn't have to wonder.
But would you wonder if you were inviting him to want you sexually, which was stated?
But that means that you would be... Now you have contributed
to the problem.
Yeah.
He's done the
thing.
I want him to do something that makes me feel that he wants me, and now he's giving
me
the slip, which in our culture is a thing.
Right, so his behavior was out of order, but is he a murderer? That's the question, right?
Mikey wants, and then we go back to Krasinski, and then we're...
Oh, you are here.
I'm alive. Sorry, that was... So, something that kind of stood out to me is he called Dr. Carroll, and when Dr. Carroll showed up, he basically told him to check the vitals, but in his testimony, he said he already checked her vitals.
And she was dead.
And she was already dead.
That's right.
So why would he have a doctor recheck over his work?
That's weird. Yeah.
And also, he said Ruth called him at night and said that... and I quote, that she was not answering the door, and she was talking about Ava, and yet in Ruth's report, she flip-flopped twice and said she saw a light on under the door, and then she also saw a cord under the door.
That's Ruth.
Ruth. Yeah, but I'm just saying, it seems like...
It's wrong, remember, because there's no space for the light of the cord.
Exactly. And it seems like there's something fishy going on with Rufus, which I started
It sounds like
with.
There's something fishy going on with both of them is what I'm
Before
getting at.
Before we transition over to Krasinski's statement, I just want to make sure, I do have jury instructions regarding testimonies from people and how we're supposed to interpret and understand them. So I'm just going to read those out so that we can understand how we're supposed to measure these, not only Dr. Stowe's testimony, but Ruth's, which wasn't a testimony, but a report given to the police.
Yeah.
Okay. It says, every person who testifies under oath is a witness. You, each one of us, you are the sole judges of the believability of a witness and the weight to be given the testimony of each witness. A witness who is willfully false in one material part or his or her testimony is to be distrusted in others. Okay, so if there's some, if that means if one part of it is not clear and then... So then we had to do that? Okay. You may reject the whole testimony of a witness who has willfully testified falsely as to a material point, unless, from all the evidence, you believe the probability of truth favors his or her testimony and other particulars. Lastly, you should give the testimony of a single witness whatever weight you think it deserves. However, testimony by one witness, which you believe concerning any fact, is sufficient for the proof of that fact.
So that means Ruth's statements to the cop, then, since she wasn't under oath, we don't count.
We can choose each one of us individually as a jury. We can just choose to just that. That's not. It's not a testimony on the stand. But for given Dr. Stowe's words. It says a witness, which he is, who is willfully false in one material part of his or her testimony is to be distrusted in others. So when he says that he states something, then he misspeaks. Or if he says that we're friends, but then actually when he's asked by the prosecution, in my view, what about this friendship? I thought she was a maid hired by Ava. And he says, oh, well, we're just close. And he just keeps going, for me, I interpret these back. It makes me very suspicious of... All of what Dr. Stowe
says. Yes, because there were so many times that he said one thing and then said quite the opposite.
That's just how we're supposed to be reading a witness, which in this moment is Dr. Stowe. So go ahead, Krasinski.
Yeah, no, I think that I believe his testimony, whether that it's a good testimony in a positive light. I think that's up for debate. But at this point, I'm not willing to just throw it all out as false, but it doesn't mean that it paints it in a positive light. That is for sure.
All right.
Well, earlier you said, okay, We understand that he, didn't do well or whatever it was you said, but is he a murderer? Here's my thinking. Whether he actually murdered her or whether he just created the situation in which she died, either way, because he was a professional and because he just was, let me rephrase that. Because he was supposed to be a professional and because he acted so unprofessionally that he did things that would create problems in her rather than make things better for her. Mm-hmm. Either way you look at it, he killed her.
Inappropriate,
wait,
not correct.
You guys,
this is what I'm thinking. You can go ahead, but just because I don't want it to be left on that, oh, well, then he killed her. He didn't physically kill her. We can all agree on that. The evidence isn't pointing to that.
We can't agree on that.
Well, he wasn't physically there.
We're going to have to agree on something. So this is the thing. We are winding down, and I just need, I mean, Harriet, I know you want to go back to see your family. You, Bill, you have a daughter. I mean, we all have family. We all have lives.
I have a proposal.
I just need us. I mean, are you at all open to compromising at all?
I have a proposal. Yes? It's a little crazy. But after Dr. Stowe's testimony, I really see that Bill and Krasinski see the issue here. I think before you thought the issue was us versus them, and it's not the issue at all, and it never was. But I think the issue really here is Ms. Michaels is gone. And there were two people that were supposed to care and love for her that she paid handsomely to do so, and they didn't. Now, being professionals that were medically trained to do so and failed to do that job, that puts them in a precarious situation. Did the prosecutor present every fact? No, we're missing tons of medical evidence that's just not there. And some of that evidence we're missing is because of his own admission. Dr. Stowe says, hey, I was trying to control the narrative, which means he tampered and admitted on stand that he tampered with police evidence, period. So now we're left here as jurors. At least I am, because it's not about me being right. It's about this woman's dead. I'm concerned with this woman's gone. But two people were responsible, and I have a moral obligation because I have a daughter at home. I have a daughter that says, Mommy, you're supposed to take care of me. And if I can't get the care I need, I'm supposed to be able to find someone that can take care of me. And here she had a doctor that was completely, completely unprofessional. We all agree on that.
Are we to throw it all on Dr. Stowe? No. You're saying that if two people are involved, you're saying two people are responsible.
But one's dead.
And it's so inconvenient. So. It's convenient and inconvenient that she's dead. We can't read into it.
I propose this, and I don't even know if this is ethical or not, but you mentioned something about it before, but I am just so upset by this. I think if it were up to me, and I don't know what you guys are thinking, but if it were up to me, you're right. There's a reasonable doubt. I can't physically prove he did it.
Because the medical facts.
Because those medical, they have been tampered with at his own admission. And given that, I don't think this doctor needs to practice anymore on anybody. So if I could vote, and I don't even know if I can, and you can tell me, is it possible to vote for someone to be guilty in that capacity?
I mean, here's the thing. We, as a jury, what we say in this room is, I mean, we're making the decision. If we believe that he's guilty and that there's just so much evidence, even if there are gray areas, but we feel as a jury that he's guilty, we can, of course...
Because see all the gray areas he made.
Are we close to voting? Is that where this is headed?
I want Bill to feel comfortable with. I want you, Krasinski. I want you to feel comfortable with. I mean, I found his testimony to be incredibly
splotchy,
damning. I found it damning. I found him to be very inconsistent in terms of how we're supposed to read or understand and give believability to a witness. I found him to go back and forth with how he qualified his relationship, how he would say, for example, you know, I never want anybody to be surveyed. And yet he would tell Ruth to keep an eye on her. He would say that I was, you know, we were friends with Ruth, but then he rephrased it as close. He said that he wanted Ava to be independent, and yet he would see her 4 to 5 times a week for sometimes 90 minutes up to 4 hours per session.
And so, at the same time, he's saying some people are too far gone to help.
But yet he doesn't want to let go and wants to continue to help her.
So
he's
about?
Back and forth. I think that something's wrong with Dr. Stowe. And
Could be, but I don't think that he's a murderer. So,
but something's real fishy about him.
I mean, look at it. It seems like he was enabling her, right? And once he stopped, she decided to cry out for help, as she did many times.
But wouldn't he be able to craft that because he's so in control of her?
That's
a type of murder. Isn't that what we're able to figure out?
And we can't trust a liar.
He received a call that was going to be good news. Hey, Mark just broke up with this girl who I hated from the beginning, and I just wanted to call and tell you, you know what? I don't have time for this. I'm at a party, you know, and as she did many times before, you know, they got off the phone. She called back and again. So, okay. And with that call back, he didn't answer. So in him not answering, that pushes her buttons to then commit suicide.
And
I'm not going to condemn him.
And he knew, that she was fragile at that point.
He knows the buttons.
He knew.
He doesn't know that she's going to die.
He knows the buttons. He knows the buttons. She told him.
Well, at some point, we all are going to have to vote or we're going to be here forever.
Yeah.
Look, I'm not willing to be here another 2 months. I'm just not.
But the other thing, I have a question. Do we have from any other source that, other than Dr. Stowe, that that she had asked if there was oxygen in the house. And
Ruth. Which is one reason.
The other liar.
Well, that's one reason why I brought it up. Like, if the whole, like, dismissing testimony thing, if she wasn't on the stand to, like, give testimony, can we actually, like, account that into the case?
And if Dr. Stowe lied as on the stand, you said, and he said he was not close, but they were friends, just to clarify.
No, he said they were friends, and then he rephrased.
He never said that they were close. He never said that.
Yes, no one ever asked if they were close. They asked if you were friends.
No, first he said, I put it here as a quote. He said that I didn't hire her as a.
I heard not close, so I would have to hear that.
No, he said, I have a friend that needs a job as a housekeeper, so I recommended her. So she was your friend, yes. And she did not hire, I did not hire her in the capacity as a nurse.
I didn't hear that.
Okay, well, let's say we don't know that one, but there are other ones. Like, I didn't put surveillance, but then I told her to keep an eye on her. I want to foster independence.
I agree with, but not close.
Wait. He said, and I wrote this down, that she was hired as a housekeeper, not as a nurse. And then... So then he asked her to keep an eye on her.
But not give back
reports.
But he also asked her to help administer medication.
Mikey at least is like honoring hand raising. Thank you. Go ahead.
So if we're not taking medical facts into account, we're literally going off testimonies. And if we're going off testimonies, we're deciding someone based off their character and what they have given. He just seems super sketchy.
Yeah.
And okay. I mean, like...
But I can choose to accept that testimony or not. So if I throw it out, then I have to go off everybody else's
testimony. But everybody has to throw it out. That's the thing.
I think it's up to the individual.
Well, okay, so the instructions, each one of us...
Can you read that again?
Yes, I can. I won't read the whole thing.
Or just summarize.
Well, essentially, it just says... Every person who testifies under oath is a witness. You are the sole judges of the believability of a witness and the weight to be given the testimony of each witness. You should give the testimony of a single witness whatever weight you think it deserves. And you may reject
like
the whole testimony of a witness who has willfully testified.
So you're saying,
Bill,
you're saying a liar is not grounds for calling him a murderer. But you
those are two different things. That's why they're two different words, a liar and a murderer.
I'm just making sure.
I was almost there with you.
I'm just saying.
Yes, but what we're
saying. But you're saying you do agree that he's a liar. He has lied on testimony. He has lied on stand. You do agree with that. Okay, great. Saying because he lied does not mean he's a murderer. I get that. But my point is, if you do agree that he's a liar, then we can't trust anything else he says. So therefore, I can't trust anything.
I want all of you to throw out the testimony then.
He's a liar.
Because he said he loved her, so he was lying about that.
Well, then
he's a liar.
Means we can't go off anything because we don't have the facts and we don't
back
have anybody's
at him
testament.
Being not guilty.
Then we're back at her being dead. And two people were there.
Well, what we
okay,
know, what
but
we know
he
for
isn't
sure.
Guilty.
You guys, let's. Okay. Can we take like 10 minutes? Can we get like 10 minutes and then come back and then decide if we're going to vote on this?
You know, some people are too far gone to be helped.
Wait a minute, everybody. I want us during our break.
Not my words.
Can we just think about how long we're willing to be here? How can we compromise? We do need to reach a consensus, and then to just hold on to that while we, and then we'll come back. All right. We'll get to the bailiff.
When I learned I was being sponsored by Warby Parker, I was so excited and had more than one person tell me how much they love that company. Warby Parker is an eyeglass company that makes buying beautiful eyewear easy at an extremely reasonable price. They don't believe eyewear should cost more than a plane ticket or an iPhone. I happen to agree. Their aesthetic is vintage inspired with a contemporary twist. I love it. Their glasses are so cool looking, but timeless. They start at $95, including prescription lenses, anti-glare, and anti-scratch coatings. All of it. Here's how they do it. In addition to their retail stores, they have a website where you can manage your whole eyewear selection process online with a free home try-on program. You pick 5 glasses from their site, and they send them to you to try out for 5 days. I recently did the home try-on program myself. I had my 5 pairs delivered to me, and I tried them each on in my bathroom mirror. 2 frames I fell in love with, and I'm ordering both. The process was easy. The frames are gorgeous, and when I was done, all I had to do was slap the return label postage they included in the box and mail it back to Warby Parker. I never had to leave my house. Plus, it's nice to have 5 days with them so you can ask friends and family for feedback. Head to warbyparker.com/deliberations to try it for yourself. You'll also be happy to learn that for every pair of glasses you order, 1 pair is distributed to someone in need. Which is incredible because 1 billion people worldwide lack access to glasses. And hey, after you head to warbyparker.com/deliberations and place your home try-on order, make sure to download the Warby Parker app from the iTunes App Store. They built this awesome home try-on companion feature, which allows you to quickly take photos wearing all the frames, stitch it into a video, and share it with friends and family to help you pick a winner. I love this company. I love their price. I love their process. I love their dedication to helping those in need, and I really, really love their glasses. Go to warbyparker.com/deliberations and order the pair you love best. They'll even call your doctor if you don't have your prescription handy. Go to Warby, that's W-A-R-B-Y, parker.com/deliberations to get started with a free home try-on. That's warbyparker.com/deliberations to find your perfect pair of glasses today.
So, Bill, you got a problem with me?
With you? No. Sometimes with you over-talking and speaking over me? Yes. When you're right, you're right. When you're wrong, you're wrong. He lied on the stand? That's fine. Doesn't make him a killer. That's how I feel. If I want to take that testimony and toss it, I'm still at the fact that there's not enough evidence to prove him guilty, which I think you agree with. You're trying to find him guilty morally, which is fine. That's your right. That's everybody's right. But I don't see it that way.
So as an American, as a citizen, as a father, there's a dead woman and no one's responsible for that?
Somebody is responsible. Why can't she be responsible? She tried to take her life 4 times before this. She has a history of pulling
people. It was 3, and that has nothing to do with today. Let me say why that has nothing to do with today. On a personal level, you mentioned that you drink, or you had drank before. That doesn't define you today. Otherwise, you wouldn't be on this jury. All the things that you have done in your past because you had some issues have made you the person you are today, but they don't define you as who you are. So maybe this woman reached out for help. And in those times, she struggled, and she could have died, and she almost did. And she was saved because someone was there to help her. Maybe she learned. And maybe there's some guy out there who sees her as a big meal ticket.
Right.
And saying, you know what, I know all the right stuff to say to her and soup her up, and I can put some drugs in her system that no one can even know about. Really, he even talked on the stand about how it was a great medical treatment, and it is. No one's disputing that. But also, there's chunks of information missing, and who's responsible for that? He is.
I don't agree with that. The medical testimony, right, we have to throw that out. We said it was because one person said it was because of this. Mm-hmm. The other person said it was because. So we're not going off that. What the medical experts say, we're not going to use that. And if I myself am not going to use Dr. Stowe's testimony, what do I have to go off of?
He told you. He already told you it was his job to control the narrative. If it's his job to control the narrative, he already knew how many bottles of pills were in there. Maybe he's omitting that there were some other bottles there. Maybe he was omitting that there was other syringes. What I'm saying is he has admitted that, hey, this was out of control, so I need to control it.
Okay, in the testimony that you're using, he also agreed that he loved her, right? He would never want to harm her. All he wants to do is help her.
Maybe he didn't. Maybe he didn't mean to kill her,
Harriet.
Maybe he didn't mean to kill her. Maybe it was an accident.
I don't want to go off of maybe. I want to have factual evidence to convict this man. We don't have any. If you want to say morally,
the facts are this. The facts are this. You're right. We don't have the medical stuff, but we do have one big piece of medical information. Mm-hmm. She died of a drug overdose.
Okay, and that's
we have
that's
no it. Idea of how they got into her system. There are only two ways of entry. No, three ways. There were no marks on her arm, so there are no needle marks. Mm-hmm. There are no crystals in her stomach, so there's no crystal marks. Right. The other entry is her anus.
Okay, and that's very that I don't that's fine. I can agree with you on that, but Dr. Stowe isn't to blame. He didn't administer it. Could have been Ruth, could have been herself. So why are we saying Dr. Stowe's guilty?
But Dr. Stowe said that the medication that he prepared for her that was administered by Roof, when he said, was able for it that she couldn't overdose. So he had already determined the dosage. He had already filled it himself.
If I'm not mistaken, he said, here's enough for the month, correct?
He gave her enough syringes for the month, not one dose for the month.
Okay, so who's to say that Ruth didn't go in there or Ava herself in a cry for help didn't give all the syringes to herself? It can be self-administered. We can't say
but he
that
he even
doctors,
said that Ruth was there to administer them. He flip-flopped
okay,
back
well,
and forth on
and
that.
And I started off by saying that we should be looking at Ruth more closely.
I mean, I just don't
Dr.
understand,
Stowe.
Bill, I just don't understand what what's
so
it going to take?
I should say that, okay, Dr. Stowe's guilty because Ruth did this or because Ava overdosed on syringes that were there.
Hey, Michael Jackson's doctor went to jail.
Michael Jackson's doctor was guilty. There was evidence to point to that.
As her doctor, he should know, hey, borderlines do this. I shouldn't invite her into my home and fuck with her that way. But he constantly did that.
This is a new study that he said was working. Other therapists
wow.
said that it was working, at least for a time period, but he's to blame.
It wasn't working. It never
so
worked.
So what they're saying, so you need to throw everybody's testimony
no.
out.
I have, because all of them are lying. And it's clear that we're not going to get anywhere, and I don't know what to do because I cannot live here with you, Bill, and I know you can't live here with me. And on that note, I'm going to find some coffee.
Next time on Deliberations.
Because we know he's wrong.
But that's not proof that he killed her.
We either go with the law or against the law.
Today's cast. Jury. Cammie Middleton. Brandon Lamberty. Teru Hara. Tony Love. Chris Markle, and Becky Brown. Courtroom, Dan Lerner, Nora Fisher, and Joel Settles. On our next jury break, we're speaking to Two Guys on Your Heads, Dr. Art Markman, to gain insight into Ralph Greenson's psychiatric ethics from a true professional. See you then.